Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We'll talk about forests once again to get started. This is less about trees taken out than the ones left behind, specifically the dead ones. A forest left alone will have trees that died but stayed upright, standing dead snags. They're good wildlife habitats, so even managed forests often leave some standing snags to provide homes to forest creatures. But what makes a good snag? We have some answers in research recently published by our guest. Dr. James Rivers from the Forest Animal Ecology Lab at Oregon State University is our guest once again. He joined us a few weeks ago to talk about bee identification keys. Now let's talk about snags and snag creation. Dr. Rivers, thanks for joining us once again.
Nice to be back with you.
So it was bees last time. This time we're potentially talking about a whole lot of creatures, aren't we?
Yes, that's right. Snags are a really important part of healthy forests, and there's a huge range of organisms that use them, particularly vertebrates. And some of the common species we think about are woodpeckers, but woodpeckers are only one group. We also have mammals. We have other types of birds like wrens and swallows and bluebirds. So lots of species able to use these habitat elements.
And what do animals get from the dead trees that they don't get from the living ones?
So it depends on the species that you're considering. Many species get some opportunity for a nest site or a den site. That's what we find with woodpeckers. They often target dead trees, but as you mentioned, we call these snags, and they create cavities in them for their nesting locations. And what the snags provide is kind of a safe environment for the animals. They get in there and they can have a nest site where their eggs are protected. And then woodpeckers are different than most because they have the ability to get into that dead wood with their chisel-like bills, but they only use those cavities once typically. So they'll leave that cavity and then some other organism comes behind them. So we often think of woodpeckers first, but really woodpeckers are the kind of the starting point for a lot of the created cavities that other species use. And it's not just other birds, but we have things like flying squirrels, for example, and martins that use these cavities as dens. And then as they get bigger over time, we can even have something as large as a bear using a snag for a den.
Well, I was going to ask about that particular part of it, about whether the standing dead trees are as valuable or perhaps more valuable to wildlife than the downed ones.
I would say it depends on the type of organisms. Some species like woodpeckers will nest only in standing dead trees. And there are some organisms that will use standing dead trees as snags, or they'll use them as logs on the ground. And it's important to keep in mind that all live trees are eventually going to be dead, and those that are standing dead eventually will come down as logs as well. So it's really a kind of a continuum to think about in terms of how a tree can provide those important habitat elements for a wide range of species. And that's not the only function that these trees have, of course. They store carbon, they're tied in with nutrient cycling, they provide vertical structure in the canopy. So there's lots of other reasons beyond just wildlife for the benefits of snags.
Dead trees is the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about standing dead snags with Dr. Jim Rivers, an associate professor of wildlife ecology in the Department of Forest Engineering, Resources, and Management in the College of Forestry at Oregon State University. Jim also heads up the Forest Animal Ecology Lab. You can join us with your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So how intensive is the creation of standing dead snags in forestry operations now? It sounds like there's been a bit of a process for a while now.
That's right. Snag creation has been around for many decades, and one of the things that is often done is snags are put on the landscape. Typically, this happens with a timber harvest, although not always, and some of those live trees that would be harvested and brought to market are left behind, essentially, and they're left as these habitat elements. So it's been going on for a long time, but one of the things that's challenging about working over long terms is that unless you are starting the project yourself or you have the foresight to think of someone else who might be coming along several decades later, those long-term studies don't often come to fruition. So in the case of my lab, we've worked on a couple of projects where when snags were being created by forest managers, they had the foresight to go out, get really good maps of where the trees were, had good information on the types of treatments that were applied to the different trees so we could assess how treatments may have varied over time. And then they put unique tree tags on each of the trees so we could go back and find the exact tree and know that we had the right tree that was treated 10 or 20 or even more years beforehand.
All right, so the important thing to understand here is we're not talking about preserving standing dead snags. We're talking about making a snag out of a live tree.
Yes, snag creation is intentional snag creation is where we take a live tree and we treat it in a way that either causes death in a short-term period or over a long-term period. That being said, standing dead trees that occur naturally are really important, and we always encourage landowners and to leave those snags if it's possible.
And so there are, sounds like, several different methods for creating a snag out of a live tree.
That's right. Forest managers have been very creative over the years in terms of the approaches that they've used. There have been something called base girdling, where you take the bottom of the tree and you cut a circle around the full circumference. You essentially starve the tree of nutrients, and the tree eventually dies there. We also have chainsaw topping, where a climber will climb up towards the top of the tree and cut the very top of the crown off, and then trim off some of the large branches that are around the area where the top was cut off. We've even, in the past, we don't do this so much anymore, but we've even had studies where folks have gone up with dynamite and blown off the tops of trees, which it always sounds like just a good reason to play with explosives.
Yeah.
But the goal of those studies were to simulate breakage that would happen during a winter storm, like an ice storm, for example. And the thought is that having that kind of jagged top would potentially provide more opportunities for fungal pathogens to invade that tree and then create a snag.
So to talk about first where you did your study, where the tags were placed, so you could go back and check on these snags later on.
Yeah, so the study that we published recently was conducted down in the Coos Bay area. This is on Bureau of Land Management land. And it was a project that I got involved with, not at the early inception, because it was 18 to 20 years ago when those snags were created. So it had the foresight of some forest managers to ask questions about how long are these snags going to be standing and how effective will these different treatments be. So they went out, created snags using a couple of different methods, and then we went back, again, 18 to 20 years later to assess what the snags look like and try to get an index of use by woodpeckers.
Was it just Douglas firs that were used for snag creation?
That's right. The target was Douglas firs in these, and relatively large Douglas firs as well. That was one of the things that the folks who started the project years ago wanted to keep constant, was the tree species being assessed so that the different types of treatments could be evaluated relative to that tree.
Jim Rivers is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Rivers is an associate professor of wildlife ecology at Oregon State University and the head of the Forest Animal Ecology Lab. We're talking about the creation of standing dead snags as wildlife habitat in the woods. You can join us with emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So, Jim, you talked about base girdling, chainsaw topping, dynamite. I see there's also fungal inoculations, mechanical wounding. What did you figure out about which method appears best?
So in our study, we focused in on chainsaw topping, a couple different varieties, but essentially topping the trees as I described earlier. Mechanical wounding was a treatment where a person took a chainsaw and instead of going all the way around the tree as one would do with base girdling, instead they focused about a third of the tree at the base and caused damage to it with a chainsaw. And then fungal inoculation is where we had someone climb up into the tree and drill holes into the side of the tree and put these samples of fungus inside the tree, with the idea being that we would kind of promote rot in the tree and decay at a faster rate than might occur otherwise. So those were the three main treatments, and then we had a combination of those treatments as well.
It seems like there are lots of variables then in what makes a snag good for wildlife. You're looking for a couple of different things that are characteristics of the snag itself.
Yeah, so we know that larger snags are better for wildlife because the size of you can imagine that the size of a tree depends or influences how many types of species and how large a species can use it. So we think about the size of the tree. We think about the degree of decay. Once trees get really rotten and the outside bark starts to fall off, oftentimes they have less value than they do earlier in their lifespan as a dead tree. And part of that is because when animals are roosting or nesting within a cavity in a tree, they really want to have kind of a hard outer shell that prevents any sort of predator coming in and accessing them. That's particularly true for birds that are nesting and have young that are in the nest cavity. And as that tree decays and that outer wall starts to fall apart and is more easily accessed, that's when it the effective life of the tree starts to decline for those sorts of wildlife. Now, that's not to say that there aren't other species like carpenter ants, for example, that do come along later in the snag's lifetime. And then those, in turn, are used by pileated woodpeckers oftentimes. So we see large holes in very old snags that we attribute to pileated woodpecker foraging activity trying to get at those carpenter ants.
So were all the snags that you examined out there by Coos Bay being used as habitat?
No, in fact, not even all of the treatments that we evaluated led to the creation of snags. So some of the trees that had the fungal inoculation treatment or the mechanical damage treatment were actually alive and growing 20 years later. Most of the chainsaw top trees, they did undergo mortality, and then those were much more likely to be used by wildlife. And one way that we can do that is look at the extent of cavities on the main stem of the snag, and that gives us an index of how often woodpeckers are going back and either creating nesting cavities or foraging areas, and they're chipping off parts of the bark.
That's interesting, though, that in the process of trying to create snags, in some cases the tree didn't die.
Yeah, that was something that I think was a bit surprising, and I think it's useful for managers as well, because despite having, you know, if you imagine someone with a chainsaw at the base of a tree that's damaging this tree, it didn't kill a lot of those trees that received that treatment. Certainly, it did cause wounding. It caused the tree to put resources towards healing that wound. And those trees are likely to not last as long as untreated trees, although we didn't look at untreated trees in this particular study. So I think what's interesting is that was a 20-year time span, but if we think about another 10 or 20 years, it may be that those trees are moving into the snag category over time at a faster rate than they would if it was an untreated tree that just underwent mortality. So it'd be really interesting to go back to these sites in the future and see if those trees that didn't die in the first couple of decades succumbed in the third or fourth decade after treatment.
Is there a plan? I mean, does somebody have a calendar mark for 20 years from now to go back out there?
I'm not sure. I think most of the folks involved with this study will be retired by then, but that's not to say that we couldn't pass it along to someone else. I know that there's a study going on looking at the decomposition of logs, and it's designed as a 200-year-old study. So the folks who are setting it up aren't the ones who are going to be finishing it. So maybe we could do something similar with this.
Oh, that's amazing. Study. Yeah, somebody thinking that far ahead. So if you came up with the idea that chainsaw topping seemed to create the best snags, is there a recommended playbook then now? If you're going to make a snag, here's how you do it?
That is... it depends on landowner objectives, really, and that's one thing that we always talk to our students about when we're thinking about managing our forests and trying to put elements of habitat for wildlife into them. If you want to create a snag quickly, base girdling would work just as well if you don't have the ability to climb up a tree and top it, because that requires some specialized training. Those snags may not stand as long, because when you have that girdling at the base, sometimes that weakens the structure at the base, and so the tree's more likely to fall. So it really depends on what the landowner wants. If they're interested in having trees that stand for 20 years and they're able to have a chainsaw topping treatment, then I think that's the way to go. But, you know, it may be, as we go through time, it may be some of these other treatments that we tried, like the mechanical wounding, also is effective at creating snags. It's just over a larger time period that we considered in this particular study.
I noticed there are no rules that require snags to be kept in forest treatments. Do you think they should be? I mean, is this a recommendation you'd make?
You know, I think whenever we can keep critical things that are used by a lot of wildlife, like snags, it's useful. There's often reasons that we don't have snags, particularly in managed forests, because they become a real hazard for anyone who's working in the woods, and particularly during tree felling operations, because those dead trees don't have the same structural characteristics as a live tree. And so it's difficult to know where the tree's going to fall and if it's going to fall in its entirety. So I think it's always a good rule of thumb to keep those sorts of elements if you can. But again, I would tie this back to that point about landowner objectives. And some folks are managing forests, and the primary management reason for that is timber, and others are doing it for wildlife habitat. So and some do it for a bit of both, just depending on the landowner.
Well, with this research, we have a better idea of what makes a good snag, and we appreciate the time. Jim Rivers is Associate Professor of Wildlife Ecology at Oregon State University and the head of the Forest Animal Ecology Lab. Thanks for joining us once again on The Exchange.